life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill, writer, soldier, war correspondent, world-famous adventurer, has now undertaken the greatest adventure of his life. As a member of the Conservative Party, he has been elected to a seat in the House of Commons. The time is historic, January the 23rd, 1901. The Victorian era in the person of the great Queen has passed away overnight. A new world is ushered in by the accession of King Edward VII. With his guide and mentor, Joseph Chamberlain, Winston Churchill discusses his first appearance in the House of Commons.
Hey, Winston, have you thought about your maiden speech?
Yes, sir. I thought about very little else lately.
Have you had any advice on the subject?
A great deal. But the trouble is that none of my advisers agree. One says, don't be in a hurry. Wait for a few months till you know the House. Another says, if your subject comes along, don't miss the chance.
And what would you say was your subject?
The war, in particular.
Capital. That terrible fellow, Lloyd George, will probably be called at 9 o'clock tonight. He'll almost certainly move an amendment to the bill under discussion. I suggest you follow him.
He's a brilliant speaker, isn't he? I shouldn't like my speech to be an anticlimax.
I'm not afraid of that.
Well, if you're satisfied, I'll make my maiden speech as soon as Lloyd George sits down. And may heaven help me. It's going to be a trial and an ordeal. I can only pray for the best.
And although I had intended to move an amendment, I will speak instead on the main question.
Yes, what will I do now? I prepared my speech on the amendment I thought he was going to make. You'll just have to think of something else.
The main question is a simple one. Are we to allow the criminals who have plunged this country into war and caused such terrible bloodshed to further carry on a career of unprincipled and unscrupulous despotism? I say these men stand condemned in the eyes of all who love the principles of justice, freedom, and common humanity. I will say no more now, as I understand the House is waiting to hear the maiden speech of another flower grown in the rarefied air of the Tory Conservatory.
What can I say? You might say, instead of making his fine speech without moving his moderate amendment, he had better have moved his moderate amendment without making his violent speech.
Thanks.
The Honourable Member for Holder.
Mr. Speaker, Honourable Members, I am grateful to the last speaker for curtailing his remarks in my favour. But I could have wished that instead of making his violent speech without moving his moderate amendment, he had made his moderate amendment without making his violent speech. That speech was, in other words, a defense of the Boers who are now fighting in the field. They need no defense from the Honourable Member. I found them brave and gallant foes, and I am proud to have fought against them. Indeed, if I were a Boer, I would be happy to be fighting by their side.
That's the way to throw away
people. But I am not a Boer. I am an Englishman. And as an Englishman, it is my duty to do all in my power to beat the Boers as quickly as possible. That is the purpose of the bill which my friend has so bitterly opposed. policy of the government ought to be to make it easy and honorable for the Boers to surrender, and painful and perilous for them to continue in the field. But whatever the Empire has lost in Africa, in men and money, it has gained 20-fold in Canada and Australia, where every inhabitant now realizes, as never before, that he belongs to the Empire, and the Empire to him. I cannot sit down without saying how grateful I am for the kindness and patience with which the House has heard me. It has been extended to me, I will know, not on my own account, but because of a splendid memory of my father, which many honorable members still preserve.
How do you do, Mr. Lloyd George?
Ah, my friend, Mr. Churchill. Allow me to congratulate you on your speech. An excellent maiden effort.
Thank you.
But you'll have to be careful, my boy. Judging by some of the sentiments you expressed, you're standing against the conservative light.
I have my own views on a variety of subjects.
Good. So have I.
So I noticed. For instance, you take a singularly detached view of the British Empire. Good night.
You'll be on my side one day. You have a liberal outlook. You're no hidebound Tory. Good night.
Word, if I may.
At your service, Lord Salisbury.
My dear boy, I've been much disturbed about you.
About me, sir?
Chamberlain also is rather worried. You know that we both have your personal interests at heart.
Yes, of course, sir. Both you and Mr. Chamberlain have been more than kind. I shall always be grateful.
Then you won't mind a word of advice in season. Verb sap, you know, my dear Winston, is often far better than a public rebuke.
But what have I done, Lord Salisbury?
I think you know, my boy, there is such a thing as loyalty to the party.
Even when I don't agree.
Even when you don't agree.
But Lord Salisbury, certain actions of your government appear to me as being inept and arrogant. How can I be expected to support that?
My dear boy, what is the use of supporting your own government only when you think it's right? It is just at that time that you should come to our aid most strongly.
Much as I respect your opinion, Lord Salisbury, I cannot agree with it. I reserve the right to criticize or oppose any course which is against my own principles.
Winston, your political career is just beginning. If you go on like this, you'll wreck it just as surely as your father wrecked his.
My father went down for a principle. You could have saved him, but you held your hand. I know you mean well, sir, and I appreciate it, but I must be the captain of my own soul.
Mr. Speaker, honorable members, the Secretary of State for War has announced his scheme for reorganizing the army on a somewhat larger scale. He proposes to form all the existing forces into six army corps by means of a paper transaction. The House cannot view without grave apprehension the continual growth of military expenditure. The Secretary of State for War said in his address, "It is by accident that we have become a military nation. We must endeavor to remain one." With that opinion, I disagree.
Hear, hear.
I believe we should finish the war by force and by the offer of generous terms, and then make haste to return to the paths of peace, retrenchment,
and reform.
It's a pity that such a promising young man should choose to commit political suicide. His father did exactly the same thing.
Wise words stand the test of time, and I am glad that the House has allowed me, after an interval of 15 years, to lift again the tattered flag of retrenchment and economy. The tattered flag I found lying on the stricken field where my father fell.
Churchill never forgets.
He must have been waiting for this opportunity all his life, Somerset. He's a real son of his father.
That episode is half forgotten now. The government triumphed, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer went down forever. And with him, as it now seems, there fell also the cause of retrenchment and economy, so that the very memory thereof seems to have perished, and the words have a curiously old-fashioned ring about them. But today, I lift that flag aloft again, and stand or fall under its fold.
He's never forgiven me, Joe, after all these years. What does it matter? In a little while, his name will have been forgotten forever. Commit suicide, just as his father did. Lord Randolph Churchill was a name to conjure with. And then he wrote his own Phyllis. Now, Winston Churchill does the same. A pity. I always liked the young fellow.